We need to improve the training methods because we are kind of sleeping there. We think we have we found a good answers to many things. But you know what blocks us from the good to find better is the fact that we need to be pushed to look beyond what is obvious. We always train what is obvious, but we have to look for those invisible aspects of baseball.
Hello and welcome to Ahead of the Curve. I'm Jonathan Gellner, and thank you so much for joining us today. I'm excited to have on our first international guest in Josef Fruchik from the Fighting Monkey Baseball Group. So let me ask you a question. What do a 20-pound wooden ball, a tennis ball on a string, and learning the history of the Spartans have to do with building better baseball players? Well, you're about to find out. Without further ado, here is Josef Fruchik. Josef, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you very much for the invitation, Jonathan.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm so glad we were able to finally connect. And I know with the time restraint a little bit, we had to check our schedules, but I'm so glad I was able to get you on the show today. So talk to our listeners about, how you got into the game of baseball.
You know, we've done a really long research in a university kind of platform. So we've been doing research with my wife for the last 15 years on biomechanics, on the movement, on dance, on kind of trying to improve the life and longevity of, the athletes that are passing through very high pressure and more people are kind of pressuring them to have a better outcomes from their trainings. And so, of course, we get many different students from many different sports. We meet many different athletes. And one of our students that came to us like 4 years ago, he was like starting to be a pro baseball player. And he just chosen not to be for many different reasons. But he's very talented, very intelligent guy. And he started to train with us. And he found so many similarities and so many important elements that we work with in Fighting Monkey Research that would be very valuable for baseball players. And so that was the kind of pathway to baseball research as well.
And you mentioned earlier that you didn't grow up knowing much about baseball, that you watched it. And so I also said that I have a huge respect for people who are really good at what they do that don't really grow up doing that type of thing. And so talk to us about how popular baseball is in Greece.
You know, like, of course, the baseball is growing in popularity also in Europe. And I think they sooner or later, it will pick up the pace of the best baseball teams. You know, I like baseball. I mean, it's something that I haven't done ever in my life. But, I have the capacity then to look from a little bit from outside what's going on and maybe study with more fresh eye why the best players are getting injured so much and what could be improved in their training. Because the really only solutions that we see now is that people that have some trouble, they do more strength training. And if they need to improve the speed or reaction, they are kind of boxed and they always use the same pathway of finding solutions. So maybe sometimes a fresh eye from outside can find a different variability into our training options.
Staying on that same subject, on your website, you mentioned that diversity breeds immunity, and I love that. But tell us what you mean by that.
Okay, the one thing which is not directed immediately to what Fighting Monkey does, but we create a platform in which we are testing various situations, in which we are testing how people are getting injured, how they can perform better under pressure. And me and Linda, of course, are at the forefront of the research, but we don't want to have a centralized power because, two brains are only two brains. So what we are doing, we are giving a kind of creative task or kind of obstacle tasks to our students, and they have to solve some things for us. And so, we're creating kind of a wider consciousness that can bring or wider testing that can bring very valuable information to us. And so we can improve whatever we are working on. That's why we are saying diversity breeds immunity, because every great system creates a great deficiency. If you believe that your training system is the best and you will stuck to it, you will probably find sooner or later big troubles. Mm-hmm. That means it applies to yoga, it applies to boxing, it applies to every single sport that we are doing, every single activity. We need to be changing and altering time to time our patterns in order to keep proprioceptive variabilities in our bodies and stay healthy and maybe last for a little bit longer before we get injured or we retire from the professional sports.
And so is that something that you think maybe traditional baseball coaches get wrong? We kind of do the same thing over and over and over and over and over over time?
I don't know what anyone else is doing. I mean, I see only what I see, and I just have the feeling there's a little bit like an energetical blockage. So sometimes I feel like when we need to refine the technique or when we need to find the speed, you know, we always think the strength is the kind of answer to it. But I just feel, you know, like there are many things that come before the strength. Like what we work on in our athletic research is that you first work with coordination. Mm-hmm. And when coordination is kind of getting more organized, then you find a rhythm. And the rhythm leads you to kinetic potential. And kinetic potential leads you to power exploration. And power exploration only then leads you to a strength training. But the kind of strength has become like such a very dominant kind of feeling in very dominant aspect of our practice, while we are very much underlooking how the rhythm, coordination, and development of kinetic potential can give us more improvement in sports.
I love that. So say that I lived in Greece, and I was a baseball player, and I came to you and I said, Yosef, I would love to be trained by you guys. So what would be the first thing that we would do?
Well, you would have to play baseball. Yeah, because, you know, like, I don't want to say, you know, like, if you do a baseball and something is wrong, you have to do something else. Every baseball player have to do baseball. That's their primal practice. That's where they have to spend most of the time. And if everything is okay, you should be doing only baseball. You should be dreaming baseball. You should be eating baseball. You should only do that one thing. So you should be completely absorbed by it. But what do you do when things go wrong? Then you have to then we have to look at what is happening. And we have to kind of, with a clean eyes, try to see where approximately are your deficiencies, where might be your future injuries, or what kind of mechanical patterns are reappearing that lead you to not have that maybe optimal kind of performance underneath the pressure that baseball season gives you.
Well, I love that. And how many days of the week do you usually work with the guys that you work with?
Oh, you know, like we don't have that many. I mean, we are very diverse and really do not want to orientate towards only one sport. But if you would enter a program that would be for baseball player, you would have to create kind of movement snacks that you would have to like injecting a little virus into you a little by a little. So your neuromuscular patterns, they would slowly change and maybe you would rewire slightly to have a better reflex, to have a better decision-making under pressure situations.
And so one of my favorite things that you guys put out, you put out a baseball video on YouTube, and I noticed there was a lot of different drills that you guys were doing. Would you mind explaining a couple of those, and I'll just throw them out there to you, and you can kind of tell me what your focus is on that drill. I'll also put a link down in the show notes so our viewers can look at this and then listen to this as well. But the first one I want to ask you about is you guys had a tennis ball on a string and you're swinging it around. Can you talk to us about what that is?
Okay, so we call it a practice ball, and this is one of the oldest tools that we are using. This is actually a tool that makes you move more. It can be used, we mainly using for boxing skills. We are mainly using it to create a kind of proprioceptive variability, more variability in your joint coordinations. So it can be used as an absolute tool, an ultimate tool for the healthiness of your joints, because there are so many variabilities you can do with it. You can have a better perception of the speed, the distance, depth in the space. You can have work perfectly on the balance. What do we do now in balancing training or perceptional training is hardly you can see anywhere else. You can work rhythm. You can work 360 degrees, you know, orientation in the space. So you can work a coordination. You can work speed. You can make a decision on when to enter, when to withdraw, when to do action, when to do not action, exactly what is necessary when you do professional sports.
No, that's great. What about the large wooden ball where you've got it all? Yeah. So is it a large wooden ball? That's what it looks like.
Yeah, so you know, we created a series of abstract tools. So you know, you have traditional tools that you find in a gym, right?
Sure.
So you can have a very heavy kettlebells, you can have a very heavy barbells. They really create a lot of a strength, but the problem is that you know, when you have something very heavy and it building up a lot of strength in your core, in your legs, in your upper body or whatever, but you need to use only one certain trajectory to manipulate that whatever object would be. So what we also realized that these heavy weights are really wearing off the joints of the athletes. And I was saying, yes, of course, everyone wants to have an athlete to be on the edge and push the boundaries and be the best. But do we really have to abuse the athletes' bodies? And I really don't think so. We just have to become more smart how a smaller weight can create so much trouble for the body as the big weight and bring more creativity into your body so we can adjust in a time of stress, in a time of difficulties, of the time of unknown. So this wooden ball, besides that it is made from a wood, it's made from very precious material. You know, if you would look at Chinese medicine, let's say, so if you work with the wood, it affects the quality of your tendons, ligaments, and where you would get injured in a baseball. Maybe you will prove me wrong, but I think there is a lot of injuries and around the ligaments and tendons in a baseball.
Right.
And so that wood has a certain holistic aspect on your body, but plus it's a nine kilograms. 9 kilograms is very little weight, but we have training methods that are so complex that even the very trained, I mean, super trained people have almost difficulties to lift that ball after 5 or 6 minutes. So with the tool that is ungraspable, that is very slidey, it's very difficult to catch, you can highly improve the interconnectivity of your joints. And that's what you want. That's what you want in the baseball. You want that your body works in a one rhythmical unity, spending less energy on moving, but rather more putting more energy into where you have to react properly and make the right decisions.
And like you said, that was a great story. Whenever I'm just looking at a wooden ball and you're talking about the holistic approaches, that's really neat.
I will give you a simple example. Okay, how are you going to make a 100-meter sprint? How are you going to make that extra little time to be first one? This, you know, this is not a technique anymore. There is something a little bit extra, and it is the quality of your imagination, the quality of the perception, quality that of the relation that you create to your sport, to your sprint or to your baseball or to a basketball or to a boxing. So, you know, like there is something that you can technically manage, but there is a spirit of how you do things, how you perform things, which kind of relation, which how you talk to yourself, before you have a competition. If you're down spirit, I'm sure you will not win. So how are you going to push yourself forward, especially in a difficult moments, not when everything goes right? And these kind of little elements are involved in our training.
Oh, that's great. So there was one more drill that really caught my eye. It was, there was a bunch of sticks that were put into the ground. And I, this is my best explanation that I can give because it's just so untraditional, which I love. But it's got the sticks in the ground and the guy is going through his pitching motion and just working his front foot through those. So what's the purpose of that drill?
Okay, so look, what we are usually doing when we work on a speed, you know, like we have all the ladders on the floor or we have a cones and we work between the cones. The fact is that when you put a little wooden sticks, what it does, anytime you make a little mistake, the small stick will fall. Mm-hmm. So what you're working on is not only that you're working, that you work your conditioning, that you work your endurance, but you also work fine motorics while you're fully engaged in a super athletic training cycle. So your brain has to compute more things, so you are kind of stimulating very stressful environment. Because we always think that we have to stress athletes by shouting on them, creating more volume or more intensity of the training. No, the brain, after a while, very quickly accommodates to those external stimuli and perceive them as the normal ones. And then when they have competition, they fail anyway. So we are trying to trick the brain with kind of very untraditional training methods where, you know, like you have a boxing drill. So you put this, you can put a cones and make your footwork there. But if I put a wooden stick, if you make a little mistake, the sticks will be falling all the time. So imagine that you have to follow a ball, or you have to follow your partners on the field. Plus, you have to be doing coordination. So it means you have to perceive the space and be aware where those sticks are on the floor. So your brain is computing many different small details from the environment. And then you are more able to execute right decision when there is very little time within which you can operate.
Well, that makes complete sense. Now that you've explained it, I'm going to have to go back and look and really dig in, because it's not something that I've done in the past. I'll fully admit that, but it's something that I'll be looking to do in the near future for sure.
You just try it. You know, many things will improve. We have many people working with us. We have kids that had the troubles, or we have people that got concussion, like a professional hockey players, mm-hmm. and they are getting really, really incredible results. And it doesn't take a long time. I just believe, you know, my background was in art. And you know what is the most important thing in art is that you need to stay creative. You always need to find a little alternation. And you know, my past, the past of my wife that was in the research, she's been a national champion in sport gymnastics. I was selected for a national team, a basketball national team, when I was a junior. But you know, of course, both of us, we found after to do something else. And you know, the background in athletics and then going into art field gave us a great upper hand on understanding how the trainings could be improved. I think we need to we need to improve the training methods, because we are kind of sleeping there. We think we have found a good answers to many things, but you know what blocks us from the good to find better is the fact that we need to be pushed to look beyond what is obvious. We always train what is obvious, but we have to look for those invisible aspects of baseball where these guys can improve their performance. And it seems like when we're looking around, there is very little creativity. And that's not bad. Maybe people found really the best, the most effective training. But I don't think effective is always the best. Sometimes this ineffectiveness in the training can bring super effectiveness in the performance, in the actual competition.
Sure. And is that the randomization aspect of what you guys are trying to train?
Well, you know, we are not only trying, we have already very good results. What we are working on is that we call it a movement situation. So the movement situation is like, let's say you have a sport, let's say we have a baseball, mm-hmm. and the baseball have certain rules. So it is like every sport has a four lines that enclose the rules. When you enclose the rules, you can have a champion. When you open the rules, you cannot have a champion. No one can be black belt in life. Everyone can be black belt in that particular aspect of a game that they play. So what we do, we open up these rules that you would have maybe even in baseball, and we make it much more difficult for you to execute the usual patterns that you have to do in your sport. We take away from you the tools that are available to you. So you have to become, you're forced to become more creative and find solutions. So in these movement situations, when we see that you are getting accommodated to the new stressors, we alter the game and we alter it forever. So you're never going to find yourself fully accommodated to a new stressors.
Okay, and that leads me to my next question, which, the more I get into it, and every other year or every year going forward, I'm trying to find things that I can measure. And mm-hmm. so you talked about how you, once they get accommodated, then you want to change the stress or change the activity a little bit. How do you know when they do get accommodated to that, or even just what are your favorite things to measure in general?
You know, a measurement in sport has been very dominant, because, you know, almost philosophically, when you look at it, from the time of Nietzsche, we thought that the science is going to solve it all. But you have, I've seen many times, like, and even mention the name, but we've also been collaborating with someone who's been Olympic champion and everything. And, you know, it's someone who didn't really ever cared on how we're going to measure his results. But what could be measurable is his happiness, is his quality of engagement, the capacity to overcome the injury, or the having enough of energetical pool to allow transformation of his skills in his particular sport to happen. You know, you have many players that do understand something is going wrong. They know. But they have not enough energy to allow the transformation to happen. And that's beyond measurable. So, you know, like you take a player, it is not enough to train the body. You know, there is no body and mind. You need to understand that athletes are human beings. And sometimes to push someone beyond their limits, it's much more mental thing than only a physical. So it's how much you press or how much, you know, here you can measure the speed. But, you know, I think baseball is a tactical game as well. You know, like how are you going to perceive? What is the intuition in baseball? How are you going to measure intuition? Because how are you going to know where the ball is flying and when to hit and when not? This is a partly science, partly imagination, partly a quality of experience. And that's something almost a godly kind of godly experience that these best players they have. That's what I've seen. So it's a combination of technicality, combination of intuition, combination of creativity, combination of being attuned to the game. How are you going to measure someone being attuned? This is not measured on the stopwatch. This is not measured on the weight you lift. Of course, it's a very important element of the athletic development, but we're putting too much attention only there, and we're completely forgetting other very important invisible parts of the game.
Well, that's awesome. And you sound like that's really the first place that you guys start is measuring a person's happiness and energy level. And is that like a conversation that you guys have as soon as you see your trainees every single day?
Well, you know, like it must be balanced. And so I don't give an impression to listeners that I would be only checking their happiness. I have a very good eye. I have over 22 years of experience in checking biomechanics. You know, whatever sport you do boxing or you do baseball, I can very quickly recognize if there is something wrong in the coordination that you do, or if something could be improved, or there is some parts that you are not so much aware. So this is like a ground level. This is earth level. On that earth level, that basic level, like a gravity level, I will try to help you to become more aware in training, not in a performance, not in a competition. But in a training, I will try to make you aware where you could improve. So I will change the training session to such an intensity that your prefrontal cortex will be able to a little bit have a time for analysis of what you're doing, and you will be able to do a slight rewiring of your neuromuscular system. And I'll be looking for different creative solutions to have a better eye for you, better movement, better perception of the depth of the space, which is extremely important for catching, for pitching, for everything. And so this would be the base. This would be like an earth. Then we would be looking at application if it applies. And then we're looking at a kind of philosophical aspect of your position. How do you sense the game? How do you feel the game? How do you find the happiness? How do you find the dancing in the game?
You know, that's something funny that I always ask, at least the hitters, is I can always tell if they can dance or not. And so we're talking about, you know, having a rhythm in the box or having a rhythm on the mound. I'm like, can you dance? And they're like, no. And I was like, well, we need to learn that. I think that's going to help you.
Well, of course, you know, if you look at them, maybe the people that are only looking at the baseball, only basketball, and the stuck in our Western culture, but look at really where everything started. Where all started all the competition. You know, it started somewhere in tribal dancing. So we have these great guys in Africa that've been, dancing together, having a kind of social interaction. They've been singing together. They've been doing that kind of amazing, physically, absolutely incredible endurance tribal dancing, and that led to competition, whatever competition that would be. Look at them, I live in Greece, and we study, of course, sports, how the sports, they evolve in Greece. Now, everyone says, oh, Spartans, and everyone thinks, what are great fighters. But you need to understand that Spartans were learning something about dancing first, learning a musical instrument, learning about architecture, philosophy, and then fighting. So it was the base was made of being able to dance together. And only then the Spartan fighters, they could move in a flank. That would make them invincible. Because they were moving large groups of people in one rhythmical unity. No other army could do that at that time. And they had a sense of poetry. They understood architecture. So if you understand architecture, you read the space in a very different way. They could understand where it would be strategically better to place the army in a mountain, in the valley, or where to meet an enemy. And I think that kind of strategy is necessary to be kind of analyzed also in baseball. So I don't think like this, again, this Western scientific approach is answer to everything. It is answer to many things, but not to everything.
That's awesome. I didn't know we were getting a history lesson today. And just so you know, I teach U.S. history, and also I've taught world history in the past, and I love the Spartan theory, and I had never heard that before. So that's fantastic.
That's why I said I like to look this invisible, because of course we always perceive these informations that are always available at first, but I'm sure we can have a look on it once together, and you will see there's a great knowledge there.
Oh, definitely. So, Josef, you seem like you're a guy who is consistently trying to better himself and trying to learn. So what is the latest thing that you've learned that you're really excited about?
Well, I'm discovering more and more the aging process, and I'm extremely excited about it. You know, I see how my body's aging. I can still manage many things, and I try to see how I can kind of make my metabolism working better, how I can make my joints younger, how I can still smile and have the same energy as when I was 19 or when I was 15 or when I see my kids now discovering the universe. And I think that is something that is creating more and more passion for me to spend in analysis of the movement, analysis of the sports, analysis of the how we have created rules. So the latest development is what we call what is beyond the name and the form. So, for example, we meet the greatest judokas, and I will be also in summer teaching a national team in Denmark. You know, like what was before the name was created, or what was there before? Like, if you could have a look at the history of baseball, let's not call it a baseball. What was there at the beginning? What was the initial kind of sparkling moment that led and had so much potential and momentum that this game grew so much in many years, and so many people are loving it and following it? So I am very much interested in that seed, and that exploration is kind of giving me more energy to go forward and explore more. So this is something that I am absolutely overwhelmed with, and I put all my energy there.
So what are some of the things that are helping you age so well that you were mentioning earlier?
You know, I mean, I feel well. Of course, we have a great program. We call it a zero forms. So it's like a kinetic hygiene. So instead of athletes spending time first on warming up, then going to training, then do recovery, and then do a strength training, we kind of managed to create a very interesting online program and also individual program for people to combine those things into one thing. So like if you properly work your joints, I oversimplify, but working properly the joints is just difficult to explain now through the podcast. But sure, if you create a good kinetic hygiene, you can work your strength and rehabilitation almost in the same time. And I think that's almost a revolutionary idea. You know, how you can prepare yourself in the morning that your body is ready to perform on a high level until the evening. And this is something we've been studying for the last 15 years. I'm over 22 years working with a very good master of Chinese medicine and working with traditional forms, how they rehabilitate the joints. So we have spent a lot of time on that. So we work a lot on zero forms. We work a lot on striking forms, body forms, and of course, working with the materials and tools. So it's a combination. We call it a kind of cycle within which we alternate the training methods.
Got it. So if we were going to try and dig in and read some of your favorite resources, your books, your programs, or anything that you've really enjoyed lately, what are some of your favorite resources?
Well, lately I was reading many Zen books. I don't know if this would be helpful to anyone, but I in one way or another, it is an incredible. I mean, I am in a kind of Zen Buddhism reading. I'm not a Zen Buddhist, but I read their beautiful thoughts and the beautiful breaking of a structure for last 15 years. And somehow that mind that is able to respond to what is available, to what is present, is something that is very important for anyone who is doing competing, for anyone who is engaged in difficulties, anyone who is facing unpredictable. So there I spend a lot of time in studies, of course, studying how we are making a constructs and how we can break those constructs so they don't block us from seeing what is available to us in our environment.
And are there any books or programs that shape the way that, you guys train baseball players or just athletes in general?
Oh, it mainly comes from our long research. I must say that, and to a certain extent, I want to keep myself ignorant, so I don't follow much of what's going on. We are like a little bit hidden in the mountains. We do what we have to do and what inspires us, and we let the reading for the people that are coming to us, and they inform us how it works in the external world. You know, when you read too much, you also kind of, you can sometimes very much influence, you cannot, or you oppose things that people are proposing. So many times it's very important you shut all your senses for a little while to the external world, and you do what is necessary to do or what you feel it's important.
Well, Josef, thank you so much for being with us today, and I really do appreciate you taking the time to do this. I know that, we have an 8-hour difference, and it's getting a little late over in Greece, but if our listeners wanted to get in touch with you, how would they do so?
Oh, they just find on the website there is an email, and we respond quite fast. We have people in our office that like to communicate.
And is there anything else that you'd like to tell our listeners before you go?
I wish for everyone, you know, like just to be more themselves and not follow the dreams of other people so they can fulfill their lives and be happy, laughing teethlessly maybe when they're old, but being happy for what they've done in their life.
Well, that's great advice. And again, Josef, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you very much, Jonathan, for inviting me. Have a nice day, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Ahead of the Curve. I hope you enjoyed the show and got something from our outstanding guest. If you're wanting to listen to past shows and get alerts for new ones, Ahead of the Curve is now available on the Texas High School Baseball Coaches Association app, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Please consider writing a review or rating the show so other coaches can find and stay ahead of the curve.